From KIOS in Omaha, you're listening to Riverside Chats. I'm Michael Griffin. Today, I'm talking with Tina Han Rodriguez of the prison abolition organization Black and Pink National.
I will say that when people think of abolitionists, they think of like tearing it all down, right? Defund the police, close every single prison, and just chaos, right? That's what people want you to think when you think of abolition. True abolition is realizing that you can build something different. We can build something better. So investing our money in schools, in neighborhoods, in infrastructure that genuinely takes care of people, making sure everyone has access to healthy foods, transportation, that's where we should be putting our money.
We're talking about how the carceral system disproportionately affects Black and brown LGBTQ plus folks, how Han Rodriguez's love of dance connects to her advocacy, and what prison abolition actually means. Stay tuned for our conversation after this break.
Next time on The Entertainment, we're looking at the filmography and obsessions of David Fincher with author Adam Neiman.
I can't think of a working American filmmaker who, when he's good, obliges you to pay attention. He is amazing at taking an essentially distracted movie-going cohort and for now 2 hours or 2.5 hours being like, you are going to look at what I want you to look at.
Listen on Omaha Public Radio and PRX.
Welcome to Riverside Chats. I'm Michael Griffin. My guest today is Tina Han Rodriguez, co-interim executive director of Black and Pink National, a nonprofit prison abolition organization headquartered in Omaha. Han Rodriguez is a dancer, educator, and Omaha native. She's worked in various nonprofits in Omaha, including Inclusive Communities and Heartland Pride, and co-founded the queer nightlife event, Revel, in 2014. Today, Han Rodriguez and I are talking about her Omaha upbringing and how it shapes her advocacy, how dance shows up in her work, what prison abolition would really look like, and Black and Pink's mission of supporting incarcerated LGBTQ plus folks. Here is my conversation with Tina Han Rodriguez. So let's cut to the chase. Where are you from and who are some of the people that helped raise you into the person that you are?
My name's Tina Han Rodriguez. My pronouns are she, hers. And who are you? Gosh, that's such a big question. Who am I? I am, I think, first and foremost, a lot of fun. That's really important to me. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I identify most as like an educator. I feel like I've taught a lot of different things in my lifetime. And I just like teaching with people, or teaching people because I enjoy the connection. I am an Omaha native, born and raised. It's funny because I was born in South Omaha. My mom is like from South Omaha. And then when I was in the third grade at the end of the year, she was like, we're moving to North Omaha because everyone just assumes that you're Latina and you're not. And I want you to have a different experience. So we moved to 42nd and Bedford. And then I went to Fontenelle. And at the time, I was really angry, and it was the best decision my mom could have ever made for me. I loved my time at Fontenelle. I graduated from Benson. That's also, I think, an important thing to know about me. I'm a Benson girl. I always tell people I was Benson before Benson was cool. It used to just be like a pepperoni pizza, y'all, and like a couple biker bars. And now it's like, you know, this epicenter in Omaha of social movement and change. So yeah, that's a little bit about who I am.
And so when you were growing up in Omaha, did you always have a passion for education? Mm. Or was there like a defining moment when the sun came from behind the cloud?
You know what? I really distinctly remember teaching the electric slide on the playground in like fifth grade. And that was like, I remember I was teaching a Zumba class probably, I don't know, 25 years later, and I had this flashback of teaching the bus stop, is what we called it at the time, on the playground at Fontenelle. So I don't know. And then I just started teaching dance when I was like 17, because I graduated from high school when I was 17 and started college. So I started teaching dance at the dance studio that I grew up in. It is called the Studio of Dance Arts, and it was in Benson from 1932 to like 2022. And that really informed, I think, all the decisions I made for the rest of my life. Teaching like young people at a neighborhood dance studio was really like the most transformational decision I made for myself.
What about it specifically?
I think like the connections to the dancers, I had kids that started when they were 3 years old that I had until they graduated from high school. And then I taught their children, you know, like that's so cool. You know, their parents, you know, their grandparents, because, you know, they come to the show every year and they remember you. It really was just such a community, and it was the most diverse dance studio in Omaha, I think, for many, many years. Now you have like three or four, I think, Black-owned dance studios that are really, really diverse, but ballet has not, you know, historically been a diverse, right, you know, community. So I really loved Little Black Ballerinas. Like that just meant so much to me, you know, seeing them all sitting down with their hairs and buns and their leotards and tights. I just loved it. I miss it, you know, but I still teach dance all the time. So okay, I feel really lucky. Right now I teach a Zumba class at the Jewish Community Center every Saturday morning. It's so funny because I had a friend tell me once, people don't really know you until they've seen you teach a fitness class. Like that, I feel like, is who you really are. But then you're, you know, like this, people just know me as like, you know, Tina, social, right, you know. Right. She's like the social butterfly that's lived in Omaha for 45 years and kind of knows everyone.
Right.
But that really, I think, is who I am as a dance teacher.
Definitely. And the values you talk about with dance, community, relationship.
Absolutely.
I think nowadays there's such pressure to associate community with, you know, fixing
things,
social issues, but a lot of the times, you know, it really is collective trust and
absolutely
time.
Yeah. Well, and people trusting you with their children every week for an hour, that means so much. Community should be fun.
Right.
It should be joyful, and it should really be about the connection, and not like we can't only be thinking about fixing things all of the time. As someone who right. only thinks about fixing things all of the time, I know it's not good for me.
And I think that, you know, with what you said, if we spend our time trying to fix a problem, you know, are we honoring what we're experiencing?
Yeah.
The joys?
Yeah.
Are our experiences more than disparities? And one Absolutely. Thing I think truly epitomizes that is Revel.
Yeah.
So could you describe what Revel is?
Oh, Revel was such a just fun little coincidence. So Revel is, I would say, just an inclusive dance party is what we always wanted it to be. It is a queer dance celebration. In the beginning, it really started off, it was like a lesbian party is how we marketed it. Because there wasn't a lesbian bar anymore, right? Like, and that is a national phenomenon, like the just disappearance right. of lesbian bars. I think there's less than 10 left.
That's a good country. Point, because I always hear about gay bars,
yes.
but not
yes.
non-mask.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
There's probably a ton of reasons about that that we can pontificate about another time. So we started off with like lesbian, you know, dance party, just creating space. It did evolve, though, over time. So it started at House of Loom, and they were really intentional with the way that they built out, like, the rules of engagement at House of Loom. So it gave us the opportunity to be really intentional about how we built Revel. So it evolved to being more of a queer party that just wasn't centered around masculine people. We just wanted to uplift and focus on femme folks every right. time we did a Revel. So trans women, non-binary folks, you know, cis women, however people identified, like literally anyone is welcome at Revel. And we also just wanted to center the people that are not often centered.
So is Revel a pop-up? Is it at one specific venue? Or?
It became a pop-up after Loom closed. And so now we do it annually for, I would say, gosh, probably 5 years or so. We did one once a month. There was always a theme. There was always so many decorations. I don't know how I did it when I look back. I'm like, oh my gosh, when did I sleep? I just didn't. but it was so much fun that it was always worth it. So now we usually do one like once a year, maybe twice a year. My partner who I started Revel with lives in New Orleans now. So it always has to involve, you know, booking a flight and her coming home and us figuring it out. So the last time we did it was at 10 Forward, which is like a cool little, you know, new dance club in Benson. And we always use the opportunity to fundraise for a cause, usually. Most importantly, pay trans and BIPOC performers. So, you know, always making sure that we are supporting our community financially, because that's really important.
What's beautiful about that is how it is kind of the materialization of an idea.
Yeah.
It can be tricky to figure out the incremental steps. And so could you provide a little perspective on that? If there are any folks that would like to think of how to have more inclusive spaces? Was an idea and then you had a list of bars that you think would be interested? And what that look like?
We were able to test it in a safe space, like I said. House of Loom already had a code of conduct in place. I will say that Revel evolved from trial and error, honestly, and just listening to feedback. We got a lot of feedback. You know, people would say like, I don't like this. And we tried to listen. I also think it took a lot of like trusting our instincts, which was scary at the time. Just trusting that if you provided something that the community needed and enjoyed, that they would continue to show up and support it. And they did. We didn't do it alone. You know, there are so many amazing creatives in Omaha. Just like collaborate with people that have, you know, you have friends that DJ probably, you know, I have friends that DJ. I feel like more and more friends that DJ, friends that are artists, friends that perform, just ways to build community and to financially support people. So I think just start small and scale it up in every way that I guess is important to you. And also, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge thing. I think small, intimate experiences are just as important as like a huge blowout party with hundreds of people.
With huge blowout parties, is there a level of intentionality or is it kind of the expectation that it needs to
be? I think you put a lot of intentionality in the beginning and then you just have to trust that it's going to be what it's going to be and let it go like the minute that the doors open. But we did try to be really intentional. Now, you know, we just have a pretty simple, you know, we have a pretty simple code of conduct when people come in that we just like to remind everyone of at the beginning of the evening and just hope everyone, you know, behaves and has a good time.
Yeah, so some big nuggets. Trust your intuition and also accept feedback.
Accept
feedback. I feel like a lot of the times there's pressure that those two ideas are mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you can actually do both at the same time. In accepting feedback can be hard, especially when it's your baby, something that you built, something that you love so much that you're so proud of. It can feel personal.
Right.
And it's so important to curating a comfortable experience for everyone. So, you know, I can look back at like mistakes that we absolutely made. And people gave us another chance, which was really beautiful. Every time we messed up, you know, we would just confront it, talk about it, and then, you know, people would continue to attend. And I think as long as you're giving effort, that's all that matters.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Tina Han Rodriguez, co-interim executive director of Black and Pink. Follow Riverside Chats on Facebook or Instagram, or call in with a brief voicemail to 402-881-0089. For a chance to be featured on an upcoming show. Continuing this kind of relationship between dance and community and relationship building, and especially with Revel, we're kind of branching into advocacy territory.
Yeah.
And so was advocacy always a part of your relationship with dance and community, or was that something that you kind of adopted later on when you started getting more involved with Revel?
Yeah, I feel like that was later. Probably if I sat down and thought about it, I would think of different ways that I advocated for my students all the time. But I haven't yet. So, no, definitely when I started Revel, there was kind of like a convergence of things happening in my life. I started working in the nonprofit sector. Revel started. And I just, you know, I was spending time, I think, with people that challenged my thinking, made me think in different ways. And that is, I think, where my advocacy career really started, was at inclusive communities, being around young people, listening to their experiences, you know, high school age students, and just kind of hearing the things they were experiencing growing up in Nebraska. That's what really informed my advocacy, is I just thought, gosh, we all deserve so much better. And I still think that. We all deserve a lot better than what we're getting currently.
I think if you were to just put it in one line, we deserve better.
We deserve so much better. Yeah.
And we are having a collective consciousness shift and just figuring out how much to focus on the problem versus how much to focus on the joy we have.
Yeah.
And it can be complicated to figure out the correct order of things and what to do.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of similarities with social justice and music sometimes, like how music executives, they create genres so that artists are confined in boxes to maximize sales.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes with communities, especially with different identities or in social justice rhetoric, it can be tricky to have this me or you. And that can also translate into, there's no such thing as a queer Black person at all. Okay.
Always ask to separate those two things.
So what are your thoughts on that? What are some ways that we can dismantle these systems?
I think that finding joy in building solutions, building alternatives, is fun. And doing it with people that you like to be around is really fun. Building programs that serve people that fill a need. If you can do that in a way that brings you joy, I think that that is, it also will build community, right? I also think just getting in your body is really important. Capitalism keeps us
getting in your body.
Yes, getting in your body, exercising, right? Like just going for a walk, like your hot girl walk, whatever it is. but getting into your body, I think, is really important to getting out of your head momentarily. As an overthinker, it saves me just a little bit of exercise every single day. So getting out of your head and into your body, because I think that the systems that we all are working under, the conditions that we deserve better from, keep us fragmented. And that's why we can't see people as whole. Hmm. Like, we can't accept that someone has all these different identities, because we insist on separating all of them, as opposed to just seeing people as holistic beings, right? We feel the need to parse them out because we're just driven to that, I think, by capitalism. Not to get too wild, okay?
Yeah.
I don't want to be accused. but, you know, capitalism keeps us siloed. It keeps us separated internally and externally. So that's why I think getting into your body is so important, is getting out of your head for a short period of time and reminding yourself that you're so much more than just all of the things that are going through your head.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think all of us are just so in our head all the time. And it's good to get out of there.
It feels safe, but not everything that feels safe is good.
And not everybody, I mean, not everything you think is good, not everything you think is true, you know, but it's important to be reminded of that. Oof, it's hard to remember.
So we've kind of broken that down on the interpersonal level. What about on the macro? Mm. What about with social movements or organizations, when we kind of run into this fallacy of there's the LGBTQ community and then there's the Black community?
Yeah. I mean, so hard in movement work, especially I think when you're trying to do large scale movement work, like when you really feel intense pressure to make a shift. It is really easy to fall into the trap of not working together, not taking that holistic approach, right? We see it as like these separate issues that cannot coexist, and all of it is equal, all of it is just as important. I think like accepting people for who they are is really important, especially folks that you're doing movement work with. I think like understanding where you sit in relation to the movement is extremely important. I, as someone who identifies as like a Black LGBTQ plus person, I believe that, you know, those voices should be at the forefront of most of the movements, because they're the most impacted. Now, I sit with a lot of complexity with that, because I also realize then we're tasking the people that are experiencing the most oppression with fixing all of it. So I do think we have to walk a fine line of how then do we support people who are trying to do the work?
Right. Because this isn't based off of
our moral ideas of goodness. This mm-hmm. is based off of mortality rates.
Yes.
This is based off of who should we focus on to die less.
Right. These are like real life issues. I think this is what you have hit the nail on why I get so frustrated with like the hyperfixation I feel like on the trans community, because it's just a distraction, right? Like our kids still have a pretty broken school system.
Right.
They're eating garbage at school. Okay. Like our food system is really broken just across the board. We don't have healthcare. Schools are not safe.
School to prison pipeline.
The school to prison pipeline. Kids are being killed. Like, and you're focused on if someone is playing in a basketball game. Like, that's wild to me.
I often think, and with our conversation, the solution is when we can act in our best interest.
Yes.
You know, and with our best interest, that means an equitable world where we can all die from natural causes.
Yeah, and everybody can live, you know, a healthy life. Kids should be able to play outside regardless of where they live.
So with all conversations, especially ones dealing with people's experiences, it's important to have intentionality and awareness with types of identities. So could you break down, if you would, kind of the main pillars for our listeners?
Sure, absolutely. So we have gender and sexuality, which are very different, okay? Gender identity is like who you feel like you are, okay? Sexual orientation is either who you're romantically or sexually attracted to. So that the acronym is LGBTQIA+. There's also LGBTQI2S+. So that stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, intersex, asexual, and two-spirit. So only people with indigenous backgrounds can identify as two-spirit. That is identity solely for Native American and indigenous communities.
And what is gender dysphoria? How would you describe that for our listeners?
Gender dysphoria is a term that describes a sense of unease that a person may have because they don't maybe identify with their sex assigned at birth or what we would call their biological sex and their gender identity. Those are two different things, okay? And that unease really can manifest itself as like severe depression, severe anxiety. It isn't just like, oh, I don't feel good. Like gender dysphoria makes people feel really terrible. And it is why gender affirming care exists. Because a lot of people have gender dysphoria. Cis people experience gender dysphoria when they maybe have things that just don't fit into that binary. So women with facial hair get laser hair treatment for cisgender women is gender affirming care. Breast augmentation surgery is gender affirming care. I think it's really important that we recognize that everyone has some sort of gender affirming care because we all like to feel good about ourselves. We like to feel, how we identify. We want to show it externally, and that's how we express our gender. So, you know, all of us have experienced gender dysphoria at some point in time, probably.
What steps can be taken for folks that are not in the LGBTQ+ community to both, you know, be educated, but also to be a part of the culture if they might not know where to start?
Yeah. I mean, I think just talking to people, I think that far more people are LGBTQ+ than we ever realize. If we made the world safe, we would know more about that. If, you know, they felt comfortable being honest about that. You know, I think it's good to go to events, like go to your local pride. There's a pride in every small town in Nebraska has some sort of pride, or one hopefully that they can drive to that isn't too far away. Go to other events, I think, that are centering LGBTQ+ people. I think that's what's important, is not just like seeing them randomly, but like actually going to the community, right? That's how you build a bridge, is like to go to the actual people themselves. And I think also, if we could escape the binary a little bit, would be so good for us. Again, it's that like idea that we're so boxed in to all of these things. I think if we could just let people grow into whoever they are instead of expecting them to come out or expecting, you know, just assuming that everyone is straight.
Right.
Yeah.
So take someone's lead on how they identify.
Absolutely.
With gender, with art, holistically have the humility to be like, this is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Allow people to show you who they are, you right. know, but in order for people to be able to show you who they are, they have to know that you're a safe person. So I think it's important right. to also, if you are an ally, you need to be vocal about it. Even small things like having a pin, having something that people know that you, especially I think right now in this climate, it's scary. You don't know who doesn't think that you deserve the same rights as them.
Right.
You know, when you're just walking down the street. So I think ways that you can signal to people that you're safe is important. Introducing yourself, using your pronouns, saying words like spouse, child, not assuming people's identity in any way is the best way, I think, to build some of those bridges.
A common thread, I feel, is humility.
Yeah.
It's okay learning.
Listen, I am a lifelong learner. I'm committed to it. My favorite thing to say is, I don't know, and I will find out for you.
It's very freeing.
It's so freeing. The pressure of thinking that you need to have an answer all the time. No, thank you.
And so with talking about, you know, different communities coming together for equity, what are some ways that we can have racial justice at the forefront of LGBTQ communities? And advocacy, community, yeah. et cetera.
I mean, it's all tied to racial justice, right? All right. of it is racial justice. If we can create a safe world for Black trans women, we can create a safe world for anyone. But they need to be the folks that we are prioritizing.
And again, just to add.
Yeah.
A pragmatic step. If there's a system where Black LGBTQ folks have health care.
Have safety.
Yeah. Everyone will have it.
Exactly. If you...
This isn't kumbaya.
No. It's just like taking advantage or actually making the systems that are built actually work for us, right? Instead of accepting that our city will always be segregated by redline, instead of accepting that, you know, one part of our city will always be neglected when there's a snowstorm. Like, no, that we deserve better. We all deserve better.
Speaking about making our city work for us, if our city is segregated, you know where the different types of people are.
Yeah, like, that's true.
If someone really wants to be with different types of people, you know where they're at.
That is very, very true. Getting out of your neighborhood. You know, I also need to get out of my neighborhood sometimes.
So what are some steps that you take to make education enjoyable? Mm. You said being solution-oriented together. Yeah, yeah. What does that look like to you?
I think it's inviting people in. Just always inviting people into the conversation. You know, I think it's imperative that if you're doing something educational that's community-centered, that there's good food involved.
I'm talking with Tina Han Rodriguez about her work with Black and Pink and how the carceral system disproportionately affects LGBTQ plus folks. Stay tuned for the rest of our conversation after this break. Welcome back to Riverside Chats. I'm Michael Griffin. You can subscribe and hear previous episodes of this show on Apple, Spotify, or whatever your favorite app is. Today, I'm talking with Tina Han Rodriguez, a dancer, educator, and co-interim executive director of Black and Pink National. Black and Pink is a local, nonprofit prison abolition organization that focuses on challenges specific to LGBTQ plus inmates. Here is the rest of my conversation with Tina Han Rodriguez.
We've spoken a lot about social justice, education, LGBTQ plus advocacy. One organization that is a pillar of all of these values is Black and Pink.
That's right.
So could you go ahead and describe what Black and Pink is for us?
Yeah. So Black and Pink is a prison abolitionist group dedicated to liberating LGBTQ plus people and people living with HIV and AIDS that are impacted by the carceral system. So the carceral systems that we acknowledge are the prison system, the juvenile justice system, the foster care family watch system, and again, HIV or AIDS.
Okay. And so is Black and Pink national, local? Yeah. What does that look like?
Black and Pink is a national organization. There are chapters in different cities, but the actual headquarters are in Omaha, Nebraska. That is where our housing programming lives. Our other direct services, we support LGBTQ plus through support services and then advocacy. Our direct service work is like food, holistic food, healthy food, healing sessions, you know, housing stability, all sorts of, you know, just basic needs that people have when they are either aging out of the juvenile justice system or coming out of the carceral system. You know, it's important that people have supports in place because it's really hard. It's really, really hard.
So what are some projects or programs that you all are working on?
So Black and Pink is really busy. So right now we are working on building a space called Opportunity Campus that is for young people aging out of the juvenile justice or foster care system. So LGBTQ plus youth are overrepresented in the juvenile justice and foster care system, I think for a myriad of reasons. And they also experience homelessness at a really, really alarming rate. So recognizing that a lot of those young folks come out and they don't have family support, we are building a housing project right now. We'll be able to house 8 young people between the ages of 19 and 24. Which will be awesome. We are starting off with housing 4 in 2024, just a pilot program. We don't want to just jump right in to 8 people. Right now, juvenile justice is such an important issue, I think, across the country. Hmm. We've got to stop criminalizing identities. And
could you elaborate on what that means?
Absolutely. So right now, there are so many bills banning gender-affirming care. There are bills even just banning the mere existence of trans and LGBTQ plus youth specifically. What will happen from those bills is young people experiencing gender dysphoria, young people rebelling, acting out, then being labeled as problems, and then entering into the foster care, juvenile justice system. Family rejection does play a part in it, obviously. But I feel like some of these bills are co-signing for families to not be supportive of their children, right? Like, if it's in the law, well, then we
I'm
should.
I'm doing the right thing.
I'm doing the right thing, right? But you're not, because inhibiting young people's ability to express themselves, it's like the most important thing, right, to young people. Figuring out who they are, being that person. Trial and error for all of us. I mean, we all had that one friend that was like Clarissa, and then she came back and she was Clarissa suddenly. Like, this has been happening since the beginning of time, okay? Can we stop acting like this is new? Yeah, clutches pearls. But, you know, these bills have real ramifications, which is young people ending up in prison. Like, that is what will happen in the long run. And that's absolutely terrifying to me. Also, LGBTQ plus youth that are incarcerated experience really long, being in solitary for horrible amounts of time. Solitary confinement breaks adults. I mean, it's in a lot of trans, especially people, end up in solitary confinement for their own quote-unquote safety. And it's not good for anyone's mental health to be completely alone, right? And we're doing it to children. We're doing it to children in the state of Nebraska. There was just an article that came out last Saturday about it. So eliminating solitary confinement is really important. Senator Wendy DeBoer introduced a bill that would eliminate fines and fees across the state of Nebraska for all juveniles. The important thing about that bill is to know that the amount of money that's collected from fines and fees from young people in the juvenile justice system is not anything that would have a tremendous impact on the state's finances, but it is so much money to the families who are expected to pay. So really, it's a win-win situation. By eliminating fines and fees, we eliminate the opportunity, you know, the chance that a young person could still be, you know, could be incarcerated because they didn't pay a fee that their family just honestly didn't have the money to pay. So that bill is really important. And I think it's important to pay attention to what's happening with the sports bill, the bill to ban people from athletes from playing a sport. It's wild to me that we want to ban children from playing in our state. Mm-hmm. I mean, what?
One of the most intrinsically human things.
Yes, playing.
Fun fact, because I'm a nerd, humans are the only species that actually play into adulthood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for animals, playing is training for hunting.
Interesting.
Not relevant to this at all, but hey, we said play.
Listen, let them play, though.
Let them play.
Let all kids play. I want all kids to be able to play. You know, I think about this, like, the last few years, there's been this surge of let them be wild, you know? And I'm like, oh, that's really sweet. That only applies to a certain kind of child. Because when black and brown children are seen as wild, yeah, it's not celebrated in the same right. way.
With the headquarters of Black and Pink being in Omaha, are there different locations throughout the nation?
Not necessarily locations, but chapters. So people can get involved in certain states. If there's a Black and Pink chapter, they do their own grassroots organizing, which is really incredible work. They do letter writing campaigns. They publish their own newsletters for their members. They welcome people home when they're released. So that's one way that folks could get involved if they're not in Nebraska. Here in Omaha, you know, we have housing, we have direct services, we have all kinds of ways for people to get involved. I think one of the most impactful ways that folks can get involved with incarcerated people is through the Pen Pal program. It's been proven that if people receive mail while they're incarcerated, they're just safer. People know that they have someone on the outside that cares about them. It's also important for folks that are incarcerated to continue to have human connection to folks on the outside. People that are incarcerated do not stop being human. You know, they still yearn for love. They still, they're still human beings that have the exact same needs as every single one of us. I think that people have this idea that, like, if you do the crime, you do the time. And it's like, but what is the time? And has the time ever helped anyone?
Right.
Because I don't think prison is helpful. I don't see how it helps people rehabilitate.
And if you see one group of people in prison proportionately more than other groups of people, that kind of has some eugenic slippery slope. Oh, yeah. Well, they're just like that. That's
exactly.
Why they're there.
Yeah. I mean, I also encourage anyone who is interested and is intrigued by this conversation. I realize it is, you know, we don't talk about it a lot. That's part of the problem with prison. We just disappear people. We don't help them in any way. If you're interested, I always tell people, like, research the roots of prison. Like, just read a little bit, you know, even just watch The 13th. Not everybody loves to pick up a book. There are some, you know, there's some real historical reasons why black people are incarcerated at such alarming numbers, considering that we are a small part of the population.
And it usually is something that begins with an S and ends with a Y.
Yes.
Good old slavery.
You know, and it just has, the ramifications are still here every day. And I think that's another thing that makes people uncomfortable is they just don't want to admit that slavery impacts all of us. It's on such a huge scale today. You know, the mortgage industry would not exist had it not been for slavery, right? Like, every single thing about our country was built on, we built this joint for free, right? It was built on the backs of black people.
With Black and Pink, do you all partner with any community organizations with
Absolutely.
Implementing services? Or do some of the community organizations
Absolutely.
You all partner with?
Yeah, we have a great relationship with the Women's Fund of Omaha. We really enjoy working with the Nebraska AIDS Project, or NAP. We have a great partnership with LinkedIn, actually. Workforce development is something that we do, trying to help folks, you know, brush up their resume, write a letter of explanation, maybe for someone who was incarcerated or has like a gap in their career due to those things. Also helping people think about, like, you have all of these skills. There are probably a few things that you would enjoy doing that maybe you haven't considered. And we really enjoy working with LinkedIn. Folks that go through our workforce development training get a free LinkedIn code for premium. I think that's really cool. It's expensive.
Just of the conversations about kind of ignoring prisons and the people there, we never hear about what happens when folks leave incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
And so Could you describe the resources that are typically available for LGBTQ plus individuals?
Yeah.
Which by definition would also be available for non-LGBTQ plus individuals after prison with reentry?
Yeah. So reentry is a really complicated process. You know, most folks leave with just like $100, you know, one change of clothes, maybe. That's not enough to get people started. So they need housing. They also need consistent employment, like making a good living wage. And that is, to me, one of the largest barriers that our folks face, is finding people that will hire them. And so we try to help with those things. And then housing, you know, finding a place to live is always really challenging. Certain, you know, people won't take certain folks. And everyone deserves to have a safe place to lay their head, right?
Very foundational.
We all can agree that everybody needs food, they need water, they need safety, they need a home. Those are some of the things that we try to help provide for people. But I mean, we have very limited resources. You know, our goal is to maybe help someone with a deposit in first month's rent, help them find a job so that they can live a sustainable life. We also just don't want to see our people struggle forever. It's not fair. If you have been incarcerated, you deserve a moment of just rest. It's a really traumatic experience.
We spoke about pen-palling. How could community members get involved with that?
Absolutely. I mean, you can just go to our website, blackandpink.org. We have a pen-pal link and you can sign up. There's people all over the country looking for different things. And you can actually pick. You can pick like the kind of pen-pal that you would like to be.
That's really cute. I never thought about that.
You know, some people are looking for like a romantic connection. Some people are looking for someone to talk, you know, about cartoons with or anime, whatever it might be. So people give us a lot of details about who they are and what they're looking for when they sign up to be a pen pal. Yeah, it is actually really, really cool.
Yeah.
Super fun experience. We also do a holiday card campaign. So around the holidays, specifically usually around like Indigenous Peoples Day, a lot of folks will, when they gather with friends and family, they'll just set out cards for people to fill out. And then we provide all the addresses and everything. And that's a great way to just let people know that they are loved.
What advice would you give folks in the community that aren't incarcerated on just having awareness on what's going on with the whole out of sight, out of mind energy that we usually have?
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, incarceration will touch all of us at some point in time in our life. We incarcerate the most people in the world in the United States. So, unfortunately, people probably will have someone that they love face incarceration at some point in time. You know, I think it's good to get involved with abolitionist organizations. If you can, something like Black and Pink. You know, RISE does great work around reentry. If you're interested in volunteering with them, there are a lot of organizations that do good work supporting incarcerated folks. We just try to do it in a different way. We don't really like to work with the systems. And they also don't really want to work with us, so it works out. You know, they're not anxious for the abolitionists to visit.
Disagree, as they say.
Yes. We agree to disagree and stay, you know, keep our distance from each other.
And so doing this work, how do you remain joyful?
I mean, I remain joyful because our members remain joyful. And if they can be joyful, I can be joyful. And also remembering that, like, joy is a right. We all have a right to be joy. It doesn't matter, like, where you are in life. You deserve to have joy in your life. You were not born to just work. Stop doing that all of the time.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Tina Han Rodriguez, co-interim executive director of Black and Pink. Follow Riverside Chats on Facebook or Instagram, or call in with a brief voicemail to 402-881-0089 for a chance to be featured on an upcoming show.
When a lot of people hear the word abolitionist, there are a lot of assumptions, but what does that actually mean in application?
Absolutely. So I will say that when people think of abolitionists, they think of like tearing it all down, right? Defund the police. just close every single prison and just chaos, right? That's, I think, what the narrative, like, that's what people want you to think when you think of abolition. True abolition is realizing that you can build something different. We can build something better than what we have. We deserve better, right? So investing our money in schools, investing our money, you know, in education, in neighborhoods, in infrastructure that genuinely takes care of people, making sure everyone has access to healthy foods, transportation, like that, those are the things that, that's where we should be putting our money, right? Instead, so much of our money is going to buying, like, tanks. Like, I'm sorry. I don't need a tank in Omaha. I don't. And if I need a tank in Omaha, I want more than the police department. Like, if there's, you know what I'm saying? Right, like, that's wild, you know? And there, it's so expensive. Millions of dollars. What if we gave that to teachers?
Right.
Like, right now, our education system is literally crumbling because we're not paying teachers and we're buying, like, military-grade equipment for local law enforcement agencies. Like, I'm not saying don't have law enforcement at all. I'm saying if we can just not continuously add to their budget and add to other budgets. That is what abolition is investing in people.
And one thing I really enjoyed from your description is the emphasis on we.
Yes,
we can decide. So an expression of community-centered efficacy.
Yeah. We all need to feel more ownership of everyone's lives and experiences around us. We are just so caught up in this individualism.
Abolitionists, it's one of those words that we hear a lot. You know, it feels like we got to search for concrete. What does that mean in actuality?
I think that's so wild because, like, this, we exist as the United States of America because of abolition. Abolitionists are the reason why the Civil War occurred. Abolitionists are the reason why, you know, slavery ended. I feel like we all should identify as abolitionists.
And it's interesting how nowadays it has such a prison context that I very rarely hear it outside of that nowadays.
I mean, prison is slavery, right? And slavery is prison. They're the same. I mean, look at what people, the wage that people are paid for working really, really, really hard jobs. Mm. The railroads exist because of prisons. Like, prison is slavery. So, you know, we all really should identify as abolitionists.
And again, just to repeatedly say, like, this isn't a philosophical, symbolic. It's a very literal,
it's very
similar
real
structures, very similar thing a
Absolutely.
Few years later.
Yes, yeah. To me, it's so obvious. And then the thing is once you see it, you can't unsee it, and you only see more.
Right.
And you have to stay joyful because it can be so hard when you really see how strong of a hold the oppressive structures have on our country and just our ideas and our minds. We really have bought in. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, I think. I feel like sometimes I feel like people don't understand why I'm always so passionate, you know? But I'm just like, if you just paid attention, you know, you would see what I see. And I feel like you would also be just as activated as I am around it.
And it's a reasonable thing to feel when you see what you see.
Yes, it is so reasonable to not think that people should just be thrown away. That is reasonable to me. It is insanity.
Yeah, absolutely.
To throw people away for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
That's ridiculous, especially someone who's young. You know, how many people got life when they were 17, 18 years old? What a waste. I think about how much talent we've lost to the prison system. Mm. You know, I just, so much art.
And
we get
what?
So much art, and it's so beautiful. Like, and for what? For a plant? So often because of a plant.
Mm.
You know? That's insane.
I don't have a smooth transition, so
I don't know how you transition around that. But I mean, you know, it's, I think sometimes we just have to sit with it.
Yeah.
It's okay to just sit with it.
Right.
Because it, like, sitting with the discomfort is what activates you to change it.
What's your favorite dance move?
Oh.
And why? Like, you get thrown into a dance circle. The lights
oh,
are flashing.
Gosh.
Yeah. It's okay. Like that.
That's my worst. worst nightmare. Okay, can I just say the pressure to dance socially when people know you're a dancer is wild. It's unfair because
do a backflip. Do the work.
I think because I danced so much, I am not a huge social dancer, if I'm being honest. I like to dance in my house, and I like to dance in like a very organized fashion. I still take a dance class if I can every year.
Organized fashion.
Yes. So I can say that my favorite like style of dancing, I really just love traditional bar work. Like ballet bar work is just so good. And then next I would say probably reggaeton. Yeah.
I like popping a lot and waving personally.
Oh, yeah. There's so many different ways of dancing. I love it.
Just with how it's changed over time, have you seen major changes with dance, especially with like dance trends and TikTok? It feels like uncharted territory with being a part of people's lives that don't go to dance class.
Yes. I mean, I love that we are embracing the artistry of other forms of dance. Like, ballet is lovely. You know, it's been around for centuries, and there's so much more. And also, dance is just, it's in every single one of us. I do not care. I love how unifying it can be. One thing I've learned teaching Zumba, which is like about doing all different kinds of dance, like I always see it as like a little trip around the world, right? Just how similar all of our dances really are at the end of the day. It kind of doesn't matter where you're from. And I love watching dancing on TikTok also. I just like to watch people dance. I think it's such a beautiful thing.
Right. And I grew up on George Lopez, Wikipedia, and American, like, So You Think You Can Dance videos.
I love that. Okay, I grew up on Twitch. Soul Train. All right. Soul Train on Saturday mornings. And then when I was little, there was always an after school show of teenagers just dancing to like popular music.
What music was popping back then?
Oh my gosh. I remember Jody Watley being on the show. It's like, oh, Dance Party USA is what it was called.
Yeah,
and you could watch it every day after school. God, I wanted to be on that show so bad.
I remember I was like 5 and I saw someone do the worm on the late night TV show, and I was like, that's me.
So impressed. So impressed. That's funny. I also wanted to be like a solid gold dancer. I love Soul Train. I hope they bring Soul Train back.
Solid gold dancer.
Yeah.
What's that?
Oh my gosh, Michael, you're showing your age. Solid gold. Solid gold was a show. And one of the hosts, her name was Crystal Gale, and she had hair like to her like feet. I remember that so clearly. But Solid Gold was a show that popular like music artists performed on in the 70s, 80s. But they had dancers like in between, before every commercial, you know, the Solid Gold dancers would dance. Look it up on YouTube. I feel like you would have a lot of appreciation for Solid Gold. It was good.
And lastly, from your perspective, why are people in this city afraid to dance?
Oh God.
No shade intended, just emperical analysis.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I think people are afraid to dance. Have you been to a DJ Crab Ranguchi party?
I have.
No one's afraid to dance.
Okay.
I think that people are just afraid of being judged. When it comes to everything, people are just afraid of being judged. So, which is silly.
Whether it's dance. Including identities and coalitions with different social groups.
Exactly.
Or being down to twerk on the dance floor.
Yeah. Stop being afraid. Get your joy. Get out there.
Well, thank you so much. This is great talking.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really fun. I appreciate it.
My guest today was Tina Han Rodriguez, co-interim executive director of Black and Pink National. Riverside Chats was created by Tom Knobloch and is a production of 91.5 KIOS Omaha Public Radio. The show is produced and edited by Courtney Bierman. Our original music is written and performed by The Real Zeebos. Our artwork is done by Ben Matukowicz. Remember, you can find the backlog of Riverside Chats episodes wherever you get podcasts. Thank you for listening. I'm Michael Griffin.